Good evening, everyone. Welcome to Holy Crap, the Vlogcast. Vlogcast that comes from a skeptical point of view to answer some of the questions of why. Vlogcast started as a combination of spite and the Streisand effect from some people on Facebook I knew back from high school who complained that I wasn't doing Facebook right because I was complaining about the way that they were doing Facebook, which was to post up stuff that was absolutely incorrect, but they were posting the stuff that they liked, so they were doing it right. We also kind of go through the old idea that sometimes the journey is more important than the destination. I'm known as Shujin Tribble all over the place. You can find me under Facebook, G+, et cetera, all over the place under that name. I was originally born in Brooklyn, New York, raised on Long Island as a Roman Catholic family member. I currently reside outside of Buffalo, New York, and I'm an unabashed atheist. On the round table this evening is Joe.
Wow, I'm first for once.
Every once in a while, I'm going to screw it around, man.
Hi, everybody. My name's Joe. I was born to a Roman Catholic family in Chicago, Illinois. I spent the rest of my childhood in Ohio under Presbyterians. I spent 8 years in the military, and now I am currently living in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania as an atheist. And I'm missing also, the little tag.
That's all right. We'll get that in a couple of seconds. Also tonight, Unrenown Tech.
Hi, guys. Unrenown Tech here. I grew up in New York. I grew up in a family that had practiced two different religions, Judaism and Catholicism. I ended up practicing both Judaism and Christianity. After many years of study, realized it's all a bunch of crap. And I'm currently in Southern Maryland, having a fun time.
Going north of the border now, Heretic Woman.
Hello. Born and raised in Ontario, Canada. Used to belong to the United Church of Canada, which was pretty liberal. And then I got a silly idea to join a Calvinist sect for a while. Don't know why I did that, but been an atheist now for 25 years. Much better that way. And yeah, loving it.
And Dallin.
Evening, folks. Online name is Dallin. Born in Northern Canada to a Lutheran family with a bit of a twist. Religion was not overly important in my family. It was more stressed to learn and find your own place in life rather than follow anything in particular. A lot of the conflicts I saw religious-based were never really that important to me until I saw what fundamentalist people were doing, not only in my own country, but just south of me, too, and I decided it was finally time to take a side, and I chose the side of reason, skepticism, and, I'll say it, atheism.
All right. Thank you all for joining us. This is episode number, I'm pretty sure I got it right, 44. And I'm going with the title for it of Fool Me Once. And no, this is not a dig at a past American president. Believe it or not, I'm actually taking a line from the old Star Trek series. But before I get to that, with apologies to Heath Enright, get going with the five-minute freestyle. Now, I've complained on a couple of different times that I didn't know what I was going to be talking about when this point comes up. And as opposed to the scathing atheist, where everything is scripted on that, which, holy Jesus, they sound great for a group of scripted guys. At least I'm pretty sure it is. If it isn't, oh my God, I need some of their like X Factor or whatever it is that mutants like them have got. My problem is that I had stuff that I wanted to talk about from the time that we actually closed out last week's show, because we got to talking about some stuff after last week's show, and I'm not going to discuss it at this point because there are pieces about it that I need to properly explain in vague enough terms to not get anybody into trouble, but still specific enough to the point that I was actually looking to make in the first place. And then something happened. Something highly unexpected. Something that nobody saw coming. Really quickly, Joe, I want you to come off of mute for just a couple of seconds. Where were you last weekend?
Oh, I was in Chicago.
at?
I was attending a furry convention called Midwest Fur Fest.
And that's what ended up happening to my whole ideas to what I was going to talk about. Everything that I had that I was ready to go ahead and talk about as soon as... There's no other way of putting it.
Yeah, because that happened right as you guys were getting off air last week.
Yes, it was. Short version. The furry community is a group of people who enjoy anthropomorphic arts. Short version, these are people who like cartoon animals. Everything from Mickey Mouse to the Transformers and then some. But that's neither here nor there. The furry community has been maligned in many, many different venues. For one thing, picking on the bronies. Whether or not the bronies want to be considered part of the furry community, when you look in a Venn diagram, guess where you are, guys, whether you like it or not. But then we've got things like MTV and Vanity Fair and CSI and all of these sensationalist things. Dr. Phil, who have basically said that furries are effectively the dregs of humanity and baby children that just never grew up. And what happened at this con in Chicago is that at the hotel, upstairs, in the stairwell of the hotel, to use the terminology that's been used and I've heard, someone released powdered chlorine and left it in the stairwell. Now, for those of you that are unaware, chlorine is the kind of stuff that you use in very large tubs to make sure that people don't get infected with stuff from the community. You might otherwise call it a swimming pool. It's caustic shit. It's intentionally designed for destroying any kind of pathogens that might be in the water to make it safe so that you don't get polio, for instance. Or at least that was what they thought way back when. This is going to link together. But what happened is that the stuff exposed to the air naturally starts to evaporate. And it gets into the air. And then it starts to do nasty things. When it's combined with water, when you inhale it, it's getting inside a big sack of water. Chlorine gas does exceedingly nasty things to the human body. And whether you like the furries or not, whether you think that they're strange or not, whether you think that it's weird to see a whole bunch of these walking, dancing, shambling sofas along the side of the road with faces. If you're a journalist who is tasked with telling people what is going on in the community, your personal revulsion or mirth is no place in a position where you need to tell people 19 people got hurt. And if these morons actually knew what they had been doing, damn near 1,000 could have been killed, or worse. You had one job to do on the newscast. These were your fellow humans. Deal with it, pull up your granny panties, and if you've got to go ahead and get offset, walk towards the cameras, not into their line of sight. You're an abomination to the term journalist. Somebody deserves an apology. And it should be coming from you. So tonight we're talking with the topic of, as Scotty best put it, fool me once, shame on you. Fool me twice, shame on me. And I'm one of those people that I learned of that expression from Star Trek from Scotty, because as the expression states, look, if you caught me, you tricked me, okay, you know what? Okay, I didn't see it. I should have seen it coming. All right, you know what? Fine. But if you're going to do it more than once, and I'm stupid enough to have fallen for it twice or more, what the hell does that say about somebody? And that's really what we're going to end up talking about. Because there are a number of things about this that are going to fall into the, and I hate to do this, I hate doing these, so Kage, this is actually for you.
I love doing them.
Where's Witchy?
What's the harm? Because there are two big ones in my head straight away, and I'm hoping that we're going to hit on these. So I'm going to give you guys the two that are in my head, and I'm going to pitch it past you guys afterwards to see if there's something else that you can think of that, you know, fits right on the bill. I mean, last week we ended up good talking about, you know, the low-hanging fruit with the people that we want to have our voices against. That was easy. That was fun. That was good. Here are the two that the family in Pennsylvania, the parents who allowed their child to die instead of taking them to the doctor because they thought they could pray the sick away. That's not the end of that piece. They got 10 years probation, weren't supposed to have another kid, did exactly the same goddamned thing. They tried to pray the pneumonia away. And again, child died, and they're getting, I believe it was 3 to 7 years of prison time instead of the what would have otherwise been a minimum of 8. But because it was a closely held religious belief, what are you going to do?
Stop making excuses.
That would be a wonderful
one. How about
one.
That to start?
Yeah.
That's one of them.
Wouldn't that be nice?
The other one that that was specifically bringing this one up for me is the prosperity parables or doctrines or whatever the hell it's called. The stuff where if you send money into our church organization so we can make sure that we can pay for this $20,000 camera that you've already paid for 3 times, God will send you down 5 times the amount of money in blessings and gift certificates and bottle caps so that you will be rich beyond your wildest dreams in the afterlife or whatever the hell is that they're going to go ahead and talk on, that kind of thing.
You forgot stocks and bonds too, by the way.
I was going to say, so how many bottle caps is it now to get through the pearly gates? Like, what's the admission price? Has it gone up?
I don't even know what I think it depends as to whether or not you're using the caps from the Mexican import stuff with the real sugar as opposed to, you know, the stuff that we get over here with.
Oh, wait a minute. It's not just the real sugar. It's cocaine, too.
So it depends on whether you
drunk Coca-Cola down in Mexico and heard all this stuff. Yeah. Actually, no. You know, Pastor Manning, I know you're listening. Sorry, not sorry.
So in other words, to tie together Dallin and Shujin's here, it's a matter of whether or not you're using Nuka-Cola or Sunset Sarsaparilla caps?
Sure, whatever it is. I only know as much as that much.
Well, I'm in big trouble because I've been using beer caps. I guess I'm going downtown then.
They only accept beer caps at the cat house.
No, chances are if you go into hell, they're going to be looking for the old pull tabs from the 70s. Nobody got those. All right.
Some good old PBR.
Oh dear God!
They still use them.
I'm sorry. You keep saying good. I do not think that word means what you think it means. By the way, Mary, thank you very much for tuning in.
Well, he did put the old part on there, so we got to give him credit for that.
Good point. Okay, so the prosperity doctrine, The Pray the Gay. Yeah, that was another one I was thinking of. Yeah. So okay, I kind of give somebody a freebie. The Pray the Ill Away. Who else thinks of some other ones where it's been exactly that kind of thing, where you know you get fooled every time because you know it's so appealing or whatever the hell. Who wants to drop one over in here? I don't want to just run down the list from everybody again. So
well, along your bottle cap line, there is the one where if you're really poor and you have like no money, you should still give your tithe because Jesus will take care of you, even though you now have no money for food.
Mm-hmm. That's a problem.
Hi, I'm a Nigerian prince.
Great. Now I've got Eddie Murphy stuck in my head.
You know, that one took a hiatus for the longest time, and then just not too long ago, on a reply to one of the blogs I have out there, it came back. Only this time it was in Russian. And I almost wanted to email the guy back and say, you know, thank you so much for reviving this. Hopefully we thought it was dead scam. Have a nice day, you know?
I just felt so honored. Were they trying to sell you a wife?
No.
Well, the last Nigerian to message me didn't want money.
No, I finally caught that exchange on Karatify me, if that's the one you're talking about.
Oh, no, that was a Muslim guy. No,
okay.
That's okay. No, the Nigerian was a whole other ball of wax. Yeah, he thought that, you know, even though I'm happily married, that I should fly to Nigeria because, you know, he could satisfy me.
Well, that's all well and good so long as you don't have to drive through Saudi Arabia, but that's a whole other issue for later.
He was going to put the plane ticket in the hotel bill.
No.
No, you're right.
So, let's see, what was... Oh, yeah, the Pray the Gay Away thing.
Uh-huh.
I want to hit that one first, because that... there is a Velociraptor meme that's been going around that I've seen recently, which... Oh. Beautiful. So whoever it is that did this one... I don't know who it is that ends up doing a lot of these, but, you know, so many of you guys get it spot freaking on. Good on you. And it's Velociraptor is asking if we can find the gene for homosexuality, mm-hmm. would I forget what which term they're using for it. I'll just use the religious.
Yeah.
We'll just leave it with that one. Would the religious people... then be for or against aborting it? And I thought that was a fascinating idea because, well, I'm guessing they probably wouldn't be because it's really hard to get those little stones through little amniocentesis. that was you, honey. You're welcome. But the Pray the Gay Away thing is one of the most heinous pieces, mm-hmm. of this whole thing, because there is literally nothing to it of any substance other than the ick factor, and my book told me that you shouldn't be that way, which is god-awful annoying.
I think a monetary angle to it too.
Well, yeah.
Yeah.
You know, the parents have to send the kid. Well, we're not doing this for free, even though, you know, we promote charity and stuff like that. So at the end of the day, somebody's walking home with a pretty fat wallet, I would think.
Mm-hmm.
There was that. And if I remember right, I believe it was New Jersey finally came down a while. Granted, it's been a while ago now. And New Jersey and the United States basically came down at a state level and said, This aversion therapy, or whatever they want to call it,
reparative therapy.
Thank you. Exactly. It's BS. It does work. It does harm to growing, maturing children and young adults, and it will do irreparable damage to compete with humans who are otherwise just fine, thank you very much, so cut it the hell out.
It puts the woo in, what the fuck were you thinking?
That's
exactly.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's a piece of it that I hadn't thought about at the time, too. How much woo?
Yeah.
By the way, Jesus never said he hated fags. He said he hated figs.
That's right.
Well, no. He hated fig trees. There's a difference.
He
had a real mat on for those
things. The tree that it grew on.
because the fig tree was out of season.
Yes.
Chris, you get a gold star.
Yes, because using the Q&A system, and by the way, Chris, thank you. And folks, yes, if you are here and watching live, please, by all means, please utilize the question and answer system. It's there for exactly this reason. If you want to send a text message, by the way, the phone number is there up on the screen that you can send it over to, a voicemail or a text message, 859-HCTV-554. The question that Chris had posed to us is, what you mean, priests asking gay guys to get down on their knees? That's... Kidding aside for a second, this is something that has bothered me for a long time. Now, Joe and I grew up through the Roman Catholic grouping and all, which Sundays was not just Mass, it was calisthenics.
Hey.
Now... With the Roman Catholic Church, especially, because that's what we know about. You come in, you sit down. You stand up, you sit down. You kneel, you sit. You stand, you sit. You kneel, and it's all up and down, back and forth the whole time.
And I'm sorry, but those cushions that fold down from the pew in front of you, they don't do anything.
No. Now, I can only speak to this part of it all because this is what I grew up with. This is what I remember and know. You guys have gone through other denominations and whatnot. When it came to going to churches or mosques or synagogue or whatever it was for you guys at the time, was it just sit down or was it all of this up and down moving and whatnot too for you? Dallin, I'll bring it over your way first. Sure. Because you had a little bit of mixy stuff.
Well, for us, it was sit down, stand up, for the most part. I started attending an Anglican church when I got engaged the first time because my now ex-wife was Anglican. Parallels aside, they actually did include a kneeling portion. That was something we never did in ours at the time. So that was the new thing. We still had cushions, and yeah, they were just as bad. I did attend a Roman Catholic service when I was in Halifax one time. Beautiful church, I must add. Like, I'll say this much for the religious groups. They do some pretty freaking cool architecture. I'm just saying.
Oh, yes.
Put that out there. But that was the first church I ever found out about, you know, having to kneel in. And it was kind of funny watching, you know, the Catholics that come in, and before they sat down, they have to sort of do the crouch kneel, do the thing, and then they can go sit in the pew. I don't know if that's something you two grew up with.
Yeah.
That I found the amount of ritual I saw in there was actually a little unnerving. It's like, are they spiking the communion wine or something, or what's going on? Like, there just seemed to be so many motions and so many things. But where I was from, like I said, it wasn't that adherent. There wasn't a lot of a lot of things other than, you know, stand up, sit down, children come up, get the children's sermon, they go to Sunday school, the adults get to sit through all the boring stuff, they pass the plate a lot, then the plates go up, and then, you know, the priest blesses the money, just leave that there, and then the money goes away. And I've actually been, I was on one of the church councils, and I actually saw them counting the money and stuff like that. I gotta admit, for a relatively small town, that church was hauling in pretty good. Given that there were two Anglican, one Roman Catholic, a Pentecostal, a Kingdom Hall. Is that what they call it?
Yes.
Yeah, okay.
For the Jacobs.
Yeah. And one very beautiful Orthodox church uptown close to where I lived. I mean, granted, we weren't Oklahoma City, but we were pretty damn close. proportional speaking, they still made good. Mind you, this was 20 years ago. A lot's changed.
Okay, and Heretic Woman, you had which? Okay, I keep forgetting. Which group was it you got?
Well, I started out with the United Church of Canada, and that's probably the most liberal denomination that we have.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, they have gay clergy. They had women clergy as long as I can remember. They perform gay weddings, as far as I know. So that was pretty liberal, and that was the same as Dallin. Like, we would stand to sing a hymn, but everything else was sitting, basically. So, and we usually had three hymns per service. I think occasionally they might ask to stand for a prayer too, but yeah, it was just stand, sit, stand, sit, stand, sit. And the Calvinists, now, this was a weird little group. They were an offshoot of Dutch Reform. So, and they were mostly Dutch families. I just happened to be friends with one of the daughters. And they of course, wanted to sucker in new blood into the whole thing. So, I don't remember. See, I didn't go to church services with them so much, as they had a weekly sort of Sunday school night. So, and that was separate from when they do church. So I only remember going to a couple of church services with them, and that was pretty similar. I don't think they did any kneeling either. But I do remember going to my cousin's first communion in a Catholic church, and also same thing. I'm like, what's with this flippy cushion thing back here, you know?
And you break your ankle on.
Yeah. Well, the ones in my cousin's church, like they would flip up when they weren't being used, and then you would flip it down, I guess, when you were supposed to kneel or something. But I was all of like 12. And I was with another one of my cousins, because I'm the third oldest cousin of like 11. So this, the one getting first communion, is like one of two that are older than me. And so my other cousin was younger. We were playing with our Cabbage Patch dolls in the pew. So we flipped down the kneeling bar. We're like, oh, we can sit down here and no one can see us playing with our dolls. All right. So that's, and we were way, way back in the church. And I think we were even like behind a pillar. So we couldn't even really see anything anyway. And we were just like, yeah, whatever. And there was like 50 kids getting their first communion, so we couldn't even see which one was our cousin anyway, and we just kind of like, yeah, we're just gonna sit back here. And in the United Church, and this is sort of a demonstration of how liberal they were, when you were, you know, they would bring the kids up, the little kids up to the front, and then they would take them away for, they called it junior church or some crap like that, but they would take them away because no little kid wants to sit through a sermon. But if you were too old to go to that, they would actually provide us with clipboards with paper and a baggie with like crayons and crap. So during the sermon, my friend and I would sit there and play like Hangman or X's and O's and crap. So until we were old enough that we figured out, hey, if we run the junior church, then we get to leave too. And so we would take all the little kids down, and all we had to do was like, you know, make them crafts or something, keep them occupied. So that's what we eventually did, so we didn't have to sit through the sermon.
There you go. Okay, Tech, how about you? You've also had mixed groupings. Which one was giving you more to keep the blood flowing?
I never enjoyed any of it except for a Lutheran church that I went to attend for a little while. Just because I got to play my guitar. You know, I got to go somewhere, play my guitar, have a good time. But, I mean, I visited a Baptist church once, and on the first time I visited a Baptist church, I pissed him off enough to actually get thrown out, and I did that two ways. The first way was I forgot to bring any cash to put into the plate, and I got a lot of dirty looks for that one. You'd be surprised at how many people watch to see whether or not you put money in, and if you do, how much you put in. That's really weird. And then the other thing was, is I asked why they celebrated a ritualistic cannibalism. And, you know, I kindly got tossed out. Although the pastor over at the Lutheran church thought my question was funny as hell, and when he heard I got thrown out of a Baptist church for it, he laughed his ass off. Guy had a great sense of humor.
Well, as far as I know, the Lutheran faith does not believe.
They don't
in
take it that seriously. Yeah. Lutherans are like the party goers. Yeah.
Okay. I guess if you know, you're talking about the lesser of all evils, and maybe you know.
Yeah, that's. I will honestly say the sermons that I heard from this pastor were definitely. At no time did he talk about, you know, worrying about sin and hell and all this other stuff. He constantly, for the little bit that I attended, spoke about helping other people and loving other people. Don't judge other people because you don't live their life. You know, you have your own life to live. You know, things like that. He was one of those rare few, in my opinion, that actually cared about other people regardless of what the text said.
Okay,
regardless of what politics were.
All right.
Now, so, like I said, that was the few fun times I had.
Okay. All right. So we've got a couple of pieces over here that I want to tag on. They're not going to sound like they're really lynching into the overall topic, but as usual, you know, we don't deal always with the end of the answer, but you know, getting all the different pieces that really go into it. So just give us a little bit on this one a second. Because specifically talking about the whole Roman Catholic thing, I want to bounce this with you for a sec, Joe. The two things that were specifically mentioned, the ritual and/slash ritualistic cannibalism, which is the correct term for that is.
Ritualistic symbolic cannibalism.
No, it's communion.
Well, that's yes. But the quote-unquote cannibalism part is what is called transubstantiation.
Oh, yeah.
Now, the other part... Yes.
Call it what you want. You're eating another human
being. Blood of Christ. Yeah.
Okay, now, for those of us that went through the Catholic realm, the other piece of this that was mentioned was ritual. That was a big piece. And this is something that is really heavy for the Catholics. Now, you work with me on this a second, Joe. Now, let's see how well we remember. You come into the church. You come in through the first doors, you turn to one side or the other, and there is a cup with holy water there where you are supposed to anoint yourself as soon as you come in.
Or touch. Something akin to a fountain or something of some sort.
Or a font of some sort, right. Theoretically, without so much E. coli, but, you know, this is America, it's not Europe. We'll talk about that one another time. Check out with George Robb or the Skeptic's Guide. They'll tell you about it but later. Okay, so you come in, you anoint yourself with holy water one way or the other, and you get whatever the pamphlet is for the day, for that weekend. You walk to whichever aisle, whichever pew you're going to be sitting in, and then I don't know if you guys had ended up doing it the same way, but it was you face the altar, you face forward, you drop to one knee, sign of the cross, tap, 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 and then slide over to wherever it is that you're going to be sitting, and then wait for everything else nice and quiet. You look and see, oh, they're going to be doing this reading, and they're going to be doing these songs. Oh, let's get the hymnal out, let's see what the pieces are, and let's just wait.
Yeah, that initial submission to Christ thing, yeah.
Yeah. Now, this is the piece that brings it all together and really brings the reason for me asking about it this way. The ritual becomes the habit. No pun intended. The habit becomes learned behavior. The learned behavior becomes ingrained behavior. The ingrained behavior becomes normal. So, why does this tie into the whole fool me once? Because if you end up having people doing the same thing over and 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 over, it becomes normal. It becomes something you just don't end up questioning. And Joe, you ask the nuns a question that they don't like, what are they going to do?
Whack!
My knuckles. Your knuckles, the palms of your hands were a normal... Yeah. What my mother, who grew up in the 50s, going to an all-girls Catholic high school, if they were going to punish you and they weren't going to rap you on the hand, they would make you kneel in the corner. You're not done. You want to try this out for yourselves? Try this out sometime. Get two rubber bands, large rubber bands. Get about 10 number 2 pencils. Don't do anything to them. Put them inside of the rubber bands, flat, so you have a little mat for your knees to rest on. And try that out for 2 minutes and see what you think of that. Now, heretic woman, you are female.
Yes.
We've talked before that the female of the human species have had so much crap thrown on them for no good reason. Schooling in public school, typically on your side of the border, should be pretty much the same as over here. It's all supposed to be equal. It's all supposed to be pretty much, you know, you treat everybody nice, and you don't... Teachers are expected to take care of their charges, not torture the living crap out of them.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think that you've ever heard of something like this happening. I would hope.
No. No. And, I mean, my mother was a school teacher for over 30 years, and that would never be tolerated. I mean, yeah. Now, I mean, they were still giving the strap when I was in school, but that's, you know, that was few and far between. And I think by the time I was in high school, that was pretty much done away with.
Yeah, they got to bring the paddle back, if you ask me, but...
Well, for us, there was the strap, but the only people that really got it were, let's just say you had to work to get that punishment. You had to be an exceptional douchebag to get that particular punishment.
Yes.
And the ones who got it, at least in my school, or schools, because I went to about 3 or 4 as I progressed up the grades, the ones who got it were the ones who really deserved it. You know, and these were the same bullies that, you know, I grew up with these guys, and eventually, you know, I'm not one who normally believes in karma, but yeah, they eventually all made the same mistake of ticking off the wrong person.
Yeah. Joe, I'm going to get to you in just a second, but there's a perspective on this one I want to hit Tech for. Tech, you and I have both got kids. Currently in school. that kind of thing is virtually non-existent, fortunately, at this point, those kinds of punishments. And I'm not going to get into the whole, it was a different time and place, we should judge it on its merits at that time, with its place in the whole, screw that voice. If a teacher were to lay a hand on your kid, how many police officers would it take to tase you and get you down?
None, because the teacher would be down and out before the police even got there.
There you go. See? We understand each... This is what I like. We understand each other. So, in seriousness for a second...
It also helps when you have a martial arts background.
You've also, I'm assuming, not heard of anything like that happening in current times. That kind of corporal punishment of some sort or other. I would hope.
The only kind of corporal punishment I was ever on the receiving end of was that from my parents. And truth be told, I actually deserved it. Like, I can remember the one time my dad spanked me. I tried to put a penny in the electric socket.
Ew.
My dad is a very tall man, very muscular man. And in his prime, which was the time I tried to put the penny in the light socket, he, you know, had his knees been in better shape, he could have probably been a front linesman on a football team, pretty much any football team. He didn't need a belt or a switch or a spoon. He took his hand. I'm an adult. His hand is bigger than mine, as it is now. And with one hand, he didn't make me pull my pants down, none of that. He just bent me over his knee, one, pow, and I couldn't sit for 2 hours.
Wow.
But he told you why, I would assume.
Oh, yeah, he cried for hurting me. He explained why he did it, and it instilled a lesson that I never forgot. I learned to play safe with electricity after that.
There's a good reason that for
that. That wasn't exactly the lesson he was trying to instill, but it was the lesson I learned. I had several spankings from my mother, and I deserved every single one of them because they were worthy of it.
All right, let me get Joe, because I don't want him to lose his track.
Well, that's okay.
But there were parents.
Three quick things. One, in that situation, allow me to show you how my upbringing was. For the latter half of my childhood, my stepfather, the gentleman who I refer to as Dad, because he's more than earned it, his method of, you know, teaching us in those situations would be to let us do it. He would let me do it, and then after my hair had stopped smoking, he'd be like, "You feel stupid? You look stupid.
Yeah.
You gonna do that again?
Mm-mm. Okay. You only do it once.
Now, if you're lucky. As far as punishment goes, my mother, when I was 10 years old, I had gotten talked into shoplifting a bag of Skittles by my brother. I was 10 years old. I was impressionable. I got caught, and I got, you know, my mother had to come home from work, pick me up at the store, and bring me home. When we got home, now usually as far as corporal punishment would go, it'd be my stepfather's thing, but my mother, no, not this time. My mother grabbed a wiffle ball bat, not one of the big ones, the thin ones.
Ooh.
She grabbed the wiffle ball bat because it was just the first thing she could grab. Bent me over and proceeded to swat my ass until the bat had flattened out along its seams split, and it became two ribbons of plastic whip.
Ooh.
That were just slashing across my ass. Pardon the French. And I've never stolen anything since.
Jeez.
Now, this
even
is
in video games, I don't steal things. And, you know, you at least have the presence of mind not to get caught.
Now,
third thing.
Oh, I'm sorry. Go on.
One last thing to answer Chris's question: the Catholic calisthenics. If you have to go to church service, you know, the hatches, the matches, the dispatches. To what extent would you join in as an atheist? E.g., do it all, stay seated, or what? I've been in a Catholic church once since my since I've been a non-practicing atheist, and it was for my sister's wedding. She is still a devout Catholic, and while I could feel the slight burning sensation on my feet, I did survive the process. So there is that.
Okay, so what is... I guess where I want to go in this, to wrap onto that before I continue on with the piece that Joe just finished with Chris's question, is that the institutionalized punishment system, as we've seen over time, has gone away because, well, to be perfectly honest, it's not fair. It's easy for somebody to just abuse that system and setup because, well, I don't like the way that this kid operates. I'm going to throw them out for asking the wrong questions. Or, oh, wait, I have the authority to go ahead and wallop the hell out of their ass? Let me go ahead and do that because I'm big man.
Now,
but yeah.
On one matter, there are kids that deserve it who desperately need it.
Now, to be fair, yes, there are some who are habitual offenders.
But it should be it should be the parents' responsibility, which, to all you parents out there, remember, beat your kids.
Or minimally, do it the right way. Now, there are – I say it that way because I will admit there have been times – in my daughter's life, Tiny Tribble, where I have spanked her, and I freely admit it. But they are rare occasions, exceedingly rare, because I have been of the opinion of you don't shove somebody towards an answer. If they did something wrong, you don't just grab them by the arm, yank them around, turn them in the right direction as far as you know, and shove them down the road. You guide them, especially a young, new life that doesn't really understand the nuance that we do. Because, I mean, let's face it, I've got 40, let's go with 40, no, hold on, not a joke on this one. I joke about being 39 years old. I'm not. I am 45 currently. This is why the joke seems to be coming through. We will go with I have approximately 40 years of sentient life and experience to draw off of currently. And of course, that number keeps increasing the older I get, which is, you know, typically a really good thing. And my daughter is 12. She has effectively 7 years of sentient experience to draw on. You take the numbers by that angle, you know, for somebody who has been teaching for a long, long time and has seen a lot of different people and could conceivably, very, very conceivably, become jaded and unhappy or whatever, if they've got the power to do something wrong, at least in the eyes of overall society, like corporal punishment, you know, if it's normal for them to use, they'll end up using it because, as the expression goes, give somebody a hammer, everything starts to look like a nail. But if you're dealing with... if you're dealing with the family, the people who are actually bringing them up, who see these minds learning day to day to day to day, they've got a hell of a different perspective. And if that kind of kick, so to speak, is necessary, they would be the ones who would be much, much closer to the situation, be much better able to see, is something like that really necessary? And ultimately, even though there are bad examples, you know, it's their family, it's their charge, it's the people that they are entrusted with, the lives and the minds that they're entrusted with to do the right thing. And personally, I wouldn't trust my daughter's well-being for that to somebody other than myself, because, well, it's me. I'm her dad. I'm supposed to. Now, admittedly, there are parents that are less than complimentary with this kind of thing, like the family that we talked about earlier in Pennsylvania. But, you know, we don't want something to become normalized that would otherwise be detrimental. And that's where I was trying to pull that together from. It's a little bit nebulous, and I will admit it. I tanked up on some drugs earlier, so I think it may be, because this part of the show, I would not normally be talking this much, and I'm just suddenly realizing that. So good on me. But even though it's not exactly with it, there is actually a link in with this. Chris's question, and by the way, who was it that Aftab, thank you very much for commenting. I don't know that you're still watching, but if you are, of course, thank you. Do appreciate it. But the question that Chris posted was regarding the Catholic calisthenics, the whole mass thing. If you have to go to church service, to what extent would you join in as an atheist? Would you do it all? Would you stay seated? Or what would you do? I think something like this has been answered by a lot of other folks who've been asked a very similar question. And this actually does still tie into the whole normalization thing. For us as Catholics, Joe, you said that you've been in church one other time for the wedding. When you were in the church as the service is going on, did you feel the compulsion to follow along with responses, the standing and the sitting and the kneeling where it was just like it's almost outside of your teeth, but you just suddenly just clamped your mouth down on
it? Yeah, and now that was the only time I've been in a Catholic church since, but I have gone like with my mother, my father, and my grandmother to their Presbyterian church a couple times, and yes, I see it as a respect thing, because it's something like when I was overseas in the Middle East, when you are in a Muslim household, like when you're invited for dinner, which doesn't happen often, obviously, but I've done it once or twice. I've had, you know, dinner with them, and I don't observe the same practices as they do. But out of respect for their culture, I at least go through the motions with them to show that, you know, I respect you and your position in the world. You know, just being nice, being neighborly. So while I would not partake in, you know, the prayers or the praise, the process of, you know, at least going through the motions, yes, I do actually go through that.
Okay. Tech, for folks that might be visiting synagogue, thank you. For some reason, couldn't pull that one out. Thank you.
Synagogue or temple, you mean?
Yeah. If somebody was visiting who might not be Jewish themselves, would somebody be offered a yarmulke or be offered a anything special or?
Well, first off, if you're a woman, you don't wear a yarmulke.
Okay.
Second, well, not traditionally anyway. You can, let's say you have a friend who's Jewish and they're practicing and they invite you to go to the temple with them. And you're not Jewish and you decide to go with them. Wearing the yarmulke at that point is a sign of respect. The other Jewish members of the faith will recognize it as a sign of respect and treat you with respect for showing them respect. If you do not know the things to sing in response, any of that, they're not going to get up in your face about it because they understand that, well, you're not Jewish. You know, you're there, you're being supportive. They're going to cut you a lot of slack. That being said, if you go in and make a fool out of yourself by being an idiot, you're going to be asked to leave.
Completely understand.
But there's a lot of leeway.
Okay. Down the Lutherans angle,
yeah.
I guess I'll go with that one. If somebody were visiting or if you were, uh-huh. Would you also remember all the things and feel the compulsion to respond or
I would again, having grown up with it, I would go through the motions and I don't see anything wrong with that. You know, somebody from, like, you know, a militant atheist branch would say, no, you should go in and sit down and stand up and challenge the sermon, which, you know, contravenes Will Wheaton's rule of don't be a dick.
Very good point.
You know, there comes a time when you have to sort of pick your battles. Like, here on the net, I'd say we're relatively free to, you know, shoot down the points that we're going to shoot down or, you know, counter the claims and everything like that. But when you're actually in a church, chances are you're with family or with a loved one who is a believer. You're attending it for a particular occasion, at least these days for us it is. Like, if I went home and it just happened to be on a Sunday, or I happened to be there on a Sunday where my mother wanted to go to church, and wanted me to come with, I would go. I would remember everything that I'd done before because the ritual has not changed in 30-some-odd years, at least not since I got that hymn book back in the 70s. I would go through all of it, you know, completely out of respect. You know, maybe I'd even drop a couple of bucks, if I had them, into the collection plate. But, you know, am I expecting to be, you know, blessed or anything like that? No. It's like everyone else has said here. It becomes a sign of respect, as in, I don't buy into what you're selling, but I'm going to go through the motions because I'm in your camp.
Okay.
They don't mean anything to me, but I'm going to go through them anyway, and then I'm going to go enjoy an absolutely wonderful cup of coffee that you guys make every Sunday. You know, there is a goal in mind.
And
after, you know, for year after service, there was always, like, you know, coffee, and then people would bring desserts and stuff like that. And quite literally, that I think the knowledge that was coming was what got me through so many of the sermons back in the day.
I was about to say you were going to say, you know, and after we get done with all this, I'm going to go ahead and have myself a bacon wrapped shrimp sandwich with cheese over here at the deli.
You know, amazingly, as I recall, in all the years I've been there, nothing showed up with bacon.
Hold on.
Yeah, Jeff.
Two things. One, since you had to mention it, my stepdad makes this awesome little finger dish. Chicken liver, marinated in beer, wrapped in bacon, and then baked or grilled. It's delicious.
Speaking of beer,
I'm coming to visit.
Second thing was on the subject of, you know, the whole thing, and as I had mentioned before with being overseas and doing something similar with families over there, I'm always for learning. Whether it be, you know, a science matter, not so much on math. But particularly history and culture, I love learning about those. And I see such, you know, cultural exchanges as a learning experience. I may not get the same thing out of it that, say, a Muslim would, but think of it this way. If we didn't have such cultural exchanges, you wouldn't have had the Muslims who are the... the Arabs, because I think this predates Muslim, and the Greeks who did their exchange
Babylon.
Across the Mediterranean, and then the Arabs maintained that knowledge in their libraries because they were the hub for, you know, Europe at the time. Northern Africa at the time, and, you know, the Indies and China. They were the hub, not just for trade, but for culture. And they had collected so much knowledge that they maintained. And they openly welcomed it and disseminated it. And if not for them, after the fall of Greece and Rome, and when you had the European Dark Ages, which really weren't that dark... if not for them, that same knowledge would have been entirely lost to time because they're the ones that actually disseminated it back toward
Everybody, Europe, really.
During the Renaissance.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. All right, and Heretic Woman?
Yes.
Oh, sorry.
Yeah.
No.
The Calvinist side of it, wasn't it?
Yeah. Well, that was – I didn't really go to church much there, but I actually, my husband's family are Lutherans as well, and that's the only thing I've had to go to in recent times. But I will stand when everyone stands, but I do not sing, and I do not bow my head when people pray.
Yeah, that's...
I will stand there and be quiet, but I will not actively participate in any of the ritual stuff. Now, I would be tempted if somebody got me to go to a Catholic church, I honestly would be tempted to go try and get communion just to see if they could figure it out, but I probably wouldn't. I would think about it, but I probably wouldn't.
It's not worth it. I'm sorry. The wafer, yeah. The wafer is terrible. The wine is bitter.
Well, see, in the church that I grew up with, and both of them, there was no actual wine. It was grape juice and little cubed bits of bread. Mm. So, but I've heard that you can actually order communion wafers online, and I've been tempted to do so just to have some fun. But
put a little bit of peanut butter between them.
If I were to describe the taste. Mm-hmm. I would actually have to refer all of us here to Heinlein's Stranger in a Strange Land. Nope. I always said that boy needed some salt.
Yes.
Just leave it at that. Before we go on, Joe, I think this place you were talking about for the, pardon the pun, the cultural mecca of the day, I think was actually Baghdad.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which
I'm sorry to say, time has not been kind.
No.
To Baghdad.
No, a lot of things have not been kind to Baghdad since 1100, when it all started to fall apart.
Yeah. Tech, you had something that you were trying to say.
Did we somehow manage to get off topic again?
Not exactly, believe it or not. And like I said, this is one of those ones where this is really the meat and potatoes of the whole rationale for doing these shows, and I'll explain how this actually all pulls together in a second. I've heard some other people who have talked about exactly this topic about, you know, what do you do? Do you go through the motions? Do you not? I am now of the opinion that if I were to go back to a Catholic church for any reason whatsoever, would I go through the motions? No. Would I sit? Yes. Would I stand or kneel? No. Because at that point, I am not part of that group. I am there as an observer. I am there as a person to be part of the experience. Does that mean that I end up getting blocked from view up to the front? Yeah, okay, you know, whatever. But truth be told, me, at this point, I'm not part of your in crowd. And I'm not going to insult you by going through the motions of something that I don't believe in any longer. And truth be told, do you really want somebody who is not part of your group to be trying to blend in so that they're inconspicuous? Mm-hmm. Now, I know I'm kind of, you know, stretching it just a little bit here, but that's the way that I feel on it. And there are some people who feel the same way, and there are a lot that don't. And ultimately, so long as you're not being a dick about it, I don't think that it really makes that much of a diff.
That's the big thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, if you're, so long as you follow.
You see, this all ties into the nail, you know, given a hammer, everything looks like a nail kind of thing that you stated much earlier in the show. Mm-hmm. And it also ties into, you know, the repetition of, you know, once you get used to something constantly happening or being said, it becomes the norm. And that's where the fool me part comes in. You've got these groups of people who have chosen to fool others. And whether they do it knowing that they're fooling them or whether they believe what they're saying is the truth, but they can't prove it, and they've just accepted the truth on blind faith, you are getting thrown into a group that you are the antithesis of that group. Why are you there? You know, is it that important that you show up for that friend or that loved one? No, or is it not that important? Does your friend or loved one understand that, you know, your state of mind is the complete opposite of what they're trying to get you to come to? You know, they may think that they're doing you personally the best thing that they can do, but only because that's what's been done to them repeatedly over time. And depending on when it started, you know, it could have been all their life. And that's the one thing that they know. They know that if you go to church every Sunday or you go to temple, you know, every week, that you're going to be saved. And here's this friend who isn't being saved. I've got to save them, you know, because that's what it preaches, you know. We're gonna preach until they convert, or we have to cut their heads off. That's another religion. Well, actually, Christianity was, you know,
they were
I make jokes about Islam, but people don't really realize they choose to be ignorant of the fact that Christianity was just as violent.
Yeah.
Oh, and if you compare the two, if you compare the violent Muslim group, okay, not the nonviolent ones, but the violent ones, and compare them to the historical violent Catholics and Christians, the Muslims have a long way to catch up on the dead body count.
The way I look at it is Islam is about 500 to 600 years behind Christianity. And if you look at where Christianity was 500 to 600 years ago, that's exactly where Islam is right now. It's the same progression. It's just, unfortunately, Islam has access to, you know, automatic weapons and bombs and shit like that.
Yeah.
Not necessarily Islam, but...
Okay, well, extremists, what have you.
Yeah,
but,
that's...
But, and the Christians in that period were more so extremists as well, if you look at the Crusades and the Inquisition and things like that.
Oh,
but,
yes.
Torquemada, what a sadass, man. But it's
Let's
the
face
same...
You can't talk him out of anything.
Yeah. But, you know, it's the it's the same progression through history. It's just they're that far behind Christianity.
Yeah. By the way, to that end, Hun, I, you know what? I'll wait to ask that when we're off the air, because if I ask it on the air, it's going to be unfair to, it's going to be an unfair question. I don't want to do that now. I will explain to you guys later date on the show, not right now, because, like I said, brain is getting a little bit on the fuzzy side, so I don't want to screw anything up at the moment. You've been watching and still watching Holy Crap the Vlogcast. We're talking with the topic of Fool Me Once, Shame on You, Fool Me Twice, Shame on Me, and even though some of these answers and some of these topics seem like they're not exactly on topic, a lot of it comes back to over and over and over again. Well, not to make a pun out of it in particular, repetition, which happens with religions over and over again because it makes things normalized. It makes them expected. It makes them am I using the right term? The de rigueur?
Yeah.
Okay. Okay. And if something is normal, if it is the expected piece, why would you go to question it? So to kind of take this guy from a different tack for a couple of seconds, I want to hit that because that ends up being a very interesting piece to kind of deflect other questions. By the way, JM, good morning to you. Hope that you had the opportunity of seeing all the streets lights turn off again. Wonderful.
Bon matin, and may I recommend the omelette du fromage.
And have another croissant for me.
Chocolate.
Give me a donut. Give me a donut, and there better not be anything in it. Sir, it's just blueberry jam. It could be hot French semen for all I care. I want a donut and a regular coffee.
Well, PG-13 reading. Bit nice knowing you.
Sorry.
I got to give him credit for the Starbucks joke, though.
Yeah, very good. So, yes.
Well, it's not even a Starbucks anymore. I can't even get a regular cup of coffee at a 7-Eleven. What could be more basic than a 7-goddamn-11? Sorry, but, you know, kind of quoting Dennis Leary here, but it's true.
Yeah.
I mean, Dunkin' Donuts. Dunkin' Donuts, you can't even get a regular donut and a coffee anymore.
Yeah, can it, Tim Hortons?
Yes. Don't worry. Now that Burger King's bought it, you guys will be seeing them more down there again.
Oh no, your Canadian mosque has been overtaken.
Don't worry about it. Anyway,
so I'm still waiting for Burger King to start selling poutine.
That would be wonderful.
Actually,
up here they do.
Mm-hmm.
I will say this much. I would not consider myself a connoisseur or a snob, but I will say this. That particular one is the worst.
Because yeah,
their gravy is about 90% salt.
Ooh.
Yeah, we'll talk about that. We'll talk about that later, because I do want to talk about cross-cultural stuff that's really good. Joe, real quick on whatever you got.
Well, actually, I was going to go ahead and kind of take us off of the... Yeah, we have been on a little bit of a religious thing, but we're not specifically talking about religion here tonight.
No, as a matter of fact, I'm going to be going completely 180 degrees on this one.
So if I may go ahead and toss one in real quick of my own, since this is episode 44, Dirty Harry, how dare you lie to me? The 44 Magnum in 1971 was not the most powerful handgun in the world. How dare you lie to me? How dare you?
Okay, so what was, and so help me if you say a howitzer, you know, I'm gonna kick your butt.
Handgun.
Yeah, it depends on how big your hand is.
Handgun. And no, it was the 5.45 Kasuo.
Wait a minute. Isn't that just an ammo type that just required a particular gun to fire it?
The power of a handgun, when you're factoring in for rifles, length of the barrel does play a factor, but usually in handguns, the power is mainly determined by the cartridge.
Okay.
Because there's not much barrel for it to travel through. So yeah. It doesn't have a long time to be under those stresses and pressures that accelerate it. That's
why United States of America, proven that we know about guns more than anybody else for 150 plus years.
Actually, I scare people in America with how much I know about guns, simply because it was kind of my job and it's kind of my hobby, as you probably noticed before.
I'm sure.
Sadly,
I don't have
a shot. I had a shotgun here with me for that one episode where we were actually talking about gun law and such. But I think I've put it away up in the closet, so no guest appearance from the shotgun.
Can't imagine why. Some of the other stuff that does come through the Q&A, by the way, and those of you that want to take advantage of it, please. Thank you. Chris, was I making a reference to the disgusting Ukrainian communal spoon? And the water troughs and the holy water and the absolutely. Absolutely. And that was positively revolting. Absolutely revolting. For those of you that don't know, earlier this year, 2014, I think it was, they did somebody did a study and checked out the holy water fonts, et cetera, in a lot of different European houses of worship, we'll just call it that, and the amounts of E. coli, for one thing, were absolutely astronomical.
And of course, they did that after I played in the holy water in Quebec.
Of course, but that wasn't Europe. There's a whole different thing.
It doesn't help if I at least sat in the holy water.
I am so glad that when the Lutheran church that I went to, when we had communion, the wine came in their own individual shot glasses.
Nice.
Hey, funny you should mention that.
If you think it gets that
Remember,
bad...
Remember, sip, don't shoot.
If you
yeah,
think
right,
bad.
Okay. I stole glances at people beside me. They were knocking it back like it was a B-52. Who are we fooling here?
Joseph.
Actually, I remember old people doing that, and it was just grape juice, and they were like, phew.
Well, technically,
it almost feels the power Mary, of the Holy Spirit to the alcohol.
Yeah.
Joe!
If you think the Ukraine and Europe were bad, imagine how it must be in Mexico.
Ooh.
They got to hit it. Well, okay,
They've got an immune system buildup, so...
Yeah, they do, we don't. So, yeah, if you're trying to do that respectable thing down there, like doing
exactly.
The rituals and stuff like that, yeah, med up.
Look, get the tequila, but don't get tequila on ice, okay?
Really?
Well, now, actually...
I'm a horrible person. If I was in charge of refilling those things, I'd be putting a diluted version of hydrochloric acid in there.
Actually, you see, that's kind of what happens when you do mix chlorine with water, hence, what we were talking about earlier. But when you add just a small amount of chlorine to a large amount of water, i.e. when you add it to a pool, or when you add a small tablet to drinking water, which is what we did with the military, if you ever look at the canteen pouches, they have this little pocket on the side of them, and that is for chlorine tablets. So that if you're not able to have what we call potable water, that is water that you can drink and cook with, you at least have a means of somewhat purifying water, at least killing the bacteria in it. Because what happens is when it mixes with that water, it's not much, but it's a small amount of hydrochloric acid that's then mixed in with that water, and it kills bacteria that is in the water. That small amount, however, won't do a lot of harm to you because you do technically have hydrochloric acid in your stomach, and your body is designed to handle that. The reason why it was such a problem with, the chlorine gas is that, yes, there's water. It mixes with the water in your body, but particularly that in your mucous membranes and your airway and such, and that's when you mix, a small amount of chlorine with, a small amount of water, you get a very strong acid. And if, in case you can't figure it out, acid in your airway is not good.
I'm thinking not.
Yeah. What,
You can also use iodine to purify your water.
I was just about to ask about that.
We don't use, iodine so often anymore.
The chlorine tablets are easier to transport. They're easier to package. It's just easier all around. Whereas with iodine, you're talking about a glass bottle of liquid that if it breaks, you're SOL. You have to measure out the appropriate drops per gallon. You have to do fractions if your canteen, which most canteens don't hold a gallon, that kind of thing. So it leaves when you have a pre-measured tablet that's designed to purify the amount of water held by your standard issue canteen, that's just easier all around for logistics.
Well, that just answered my question.
There you go. Okay, now, since we had mentioned about it a little while ago, I did a little bit of really quick hunting, and for those of you that want to go ahead and try to find it on Amazon, apparently, according to this, you can find a box of 1,000 communion wafers available for $20 with free shipping if you bundle it together with $35 worth of merchandise total.
Now, so, $20 for 1,000 communion wafers? Is and $5.96 for a jar of Jif.
Is that the same guy who sells the fortune cookies? Or, I'm sorry, the proverb cookies?
I don't know, but according
that
to this, it's being sold through
a third. That would be funny if you could shape the wafers into fortune cookies. And cut out little snippets from the Bible from like Psalms or something like that.
No. My favorite, Ezekiel 23:20.
Oh jeez.
Which says
go ahead.
Which is not PG-13.
you're thinking a little bit more Tarantino. But anyway. I stumbled across another one without even thinking about it. Another fool me situation. How dare you bring me a fortune cookie? How dare you lie to me? I open it up. What does it say? This isn't a fortune. This is some half-assed proverb. Yeah. You didn't even get Confucius right.
The sad thing about fortune cookies is that they are an American product. You know, they're not Chinese.
I know.
And the only positive thing to come out of them in today's day and age is if you flip the majority of them, if you flip over the paper on the back, you might be able to, it might be one of the ones that contains a single word of Chinese so that you can learn Chinese.
There's always the tradition of whatever it says in your fortune cookie you add in bed on the end of that. Yeah,
yeah, I've heard that one.
But with robots at work.
If you look on the backside of the plastic packaging for your fortune cookies, if you can, assuming that you can even read the fly spec font that they've got on there, you might realize that most of these are being made in my old country, Brooklyn. No lie, seriously, Boston. Look them up. You'll see. I'm quite serious.
You know, over the packaging, expecting for the once in your life to see a product that actually says made in China.
And it's
says
not.
Made in USA.
Yeah. in Brooklyn, no less. By the way, if you do go looking for the communion wafers, yes, you can find them in groups of 1,000, 500, 100. You will also be able to find the little single serving cups of grape juice. Hermetically sealed, so if you need to go out somewhere, you can just go, oh, we need to serve you. Okay, here's a little cup. Let's open up the first top. Here's your wafer, and here's the next piece of it inside of it. Here's your juice. Drink and eat up. Congratulations. And if that's not enough for you, if you really need one of those belt change pouch things, they have little guys, almost like anti-Pez dispensers, that will actually hold them in a metal container in a tube, and they will shove out one after the other so you can hand them out to people that way.
Hermetically sealed Jesus juice, huh?
Order now and you can get this free self-flagellation device.
Find that in Brooklyn anytime too.
If I did a Christmas tree, I would get the communion wafers and string them up and put them on the tree. But
I have a question: Are communion wafers? Because I never had them. Do they react the same way when they touch a liquid? Do they react the same way an Oreo cookie reacts when it touches milk? It starts to break down. So I was thinking, you know, maybe you could take communion wafer and like dunk it into the cup. Sorry, I'm a little dry today.
I have seen that.
True story.
At the Anglican Church I was at before, there's a lot of older people. The dentures don't quite work the way they should. So now this particular one, you also took the wine from a single cup, and of course they wiped it. So, okay, yeah, all right. I'm still alive, so apparently I didn't catch anything, and I.
I'm thinking bits of wafer floating around in there.
Yeah, you just put two and two together. The priest would actually dunk the wafer in and then give it to those people who had trouble chewing. Or, you know, who were maybe told, leave your dentures at home because, you know, God wants you as you are. I don't know, okay? Yeah. I never stopped to ask because, A, it was kind of disrespectful, and B, I really didn't care.
So you've seen people dunk them. Has any of the churches gone like New Age with them and did like chocolate coating on these things?
That would rock.
Well, you see, you just had me think, and the next time I do a party and I'm going to make, you know, like a cheese and salsa thing, instead of tortilla chips, I'll go order some.
You'll know it's communion wafer.
The Del Monte tomatoes, yeah. And then the side of communion wafers.
And it would be a low sodium option because, of course, they have no salt on them.
Well, not only are they low salt, but do they have gluten in them? Are they gluten-free wafers?
Yeah. You can get gluten-free wafers, I've heard.
Oh, there you go.
Sure, yeah. Joe.
To answer Chris's question, how come you never get Miss Fortune cookies? Actually, if you go to missfortunecookieshop.com, you can order your own, and you can. They have a little thing where you can put in your own thing. Like, for example, the example they have here is failure teaches success, except in your case. And you can submit this thing and have them print them and put them into cookies, you know, at your pleasure.
Wow.
Oh, that's awesome.
You forgot to add in bed. By the way, if you go looking for the communion wafers, please remember you need to be searching in the Amazon section for, I kid you not, grocery and gourmet food.
Right. Even the Irish are like, yeah, you ain't fooling nobody.
Yeah. All right.
Are the communion wafers made out of a bread product or a potato product?
It's unleavened bread.
It is a bread type of thing. It's a little bit bigger than a Necco wafer. It is not nearly as tasty as a Necco wafer, which says something.
If it's a bread product, what we could do is we could grind up a bunch of them and then use them to do the bread coating for the pork chops.
It has nothing to do with potatoes. The whole Irish comment actually comes again from a dearest Dennis Leary quote, because he had made a joke about finding a book on, quote, Irish cuisine. allow me to illustrate the idea of Irish cuisine. You take whatever the hell you have available, you put it in a pot, you boil it for 8 hours, and then you sip it through a straw.
No, you have Irish cuisine all wrong. What you do is you pick up the potato and you stare at it, and then you make up your mind whether to eat it as is or wait until it ferments and then drink it.
Well, here's a little something that these are kind of like communion wafers. These are from Mexico, and they're called oblias. And they're like a communion wafer, but they have a goat milk caramel in between.
You're eating goat milk communion wafers as a snack.
I fell in love with these in Mexico, and they're pretty awesome. Yeah. A relative sent them over.
You know, yeah. It's kind of funny. I can almost loop this back because we got into the whole thing about communion wafers and fortune cookies. Another big difference, at least up here. I can go to like a Chinese food place and get a fortune cookie, and yeah, I get my little fortune with the embed. You flip it over, you get sometimes 6, maybe 7 lottery numbers.
Yeah,
yes.
the lucky numbers.
Yeah, so then you can go to your lottery booth, get your, now up here we got our Lotto Max or 649 lottery ticket. It's nothing like the Powerball. I wish we had something like the Powerball up here because 250 million? Yeah, I'm all for that.
Mm-hmm.
The best we can do here is 50. But, you know, so you take your lucky numbers, you put them in, you put it away. One of my old landlords gave me this one because we were talking lottery one day, and he says to me, you're not buying a ticket per se. What you're buying is hope. Because you're buying it on the hope that the numbers are going to turn in your favor. Unlike the fool me once, shame on you, fool me twice, yada, 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 at least with a lottery, there is a chance, though slim, there does exist a mathematically statistical possibility that you're going to walk away $50 million richer.
It's gambling. That is exactly what it is.
But there is a statistical proof that at some point you could benefit, you could win.
Yes, and what makes the difference between a lottery, I'll tell you about this in a second, a lottery versus gambling, is that with a lottery, everybody's odds are the same. Whereas with gambling, the house wins.
Yeah.
Period.
That's why the statistics have shown that if you get a randomly generated lottery ticket versus picking your own numbers, you actually have a lower chance of winning.
Yeah, but ultimately, if you try to play the odds with gambling, institutionalized gambling, you will lose because the rules are set up in such a fashion that the house wins more often than you do. It doesn't have to be a lot, but it has to be enough to keep the economy rolling. Mm-hmm. There is an entire city metropolis built on exactly that premise. Yeah. And guess what? They ain't bankrupt. Consider that.
But my point is, with a lottery, there's always hope.
Yep.
Yeah.
You might not win, but it's not a question. Yeah, but it's not a question of being fooled. Whereas, so I could put $20 a week. I used to put $20 a week into lottery tickets. I have had occasions where I've won it back. Days I've won $5. Days I've won a free ticket. You know, but I would still play it. But now, if I'm going to put $20 a week into the brass plate at my local church on the premise that I'm going to be saved, I really am just fooling myself.
Yes. Yep.
You know, that's the big shame on me.
Yep.
Now, I want to show something that I know I'm taking a bit of a risk. And no, this is not like the risk of kind of thing as well, what we had talked about once before. I'm going to take a little bit of a risk of alienating and very likely pissing a few people off. I am making the announcement ahead of time because I want people to understand that if you have some kind of a visceral reaction to what I'm about to do and say, please, please examine it very carefully and closely, because the argument that I was making about repetition and ritual becoming normalization is incredibly powerful. I'll just name it over here. I have a Asian rice cracker, as you can see over here, is actually what it is, a sesame flavor in particular. It's basically puffed rice. this is about the right size for... It's actually a little bit bigger than what most Eucharist wafers would be if you were to go to a Catholic church, usually. Sometimes they get the like really big ones, and they break it up into pieces and corners and whatever the hell it is.
Usually I see them at the like quarter size.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, how you can get a corner out of a circle, I don't know. Maybe that's part of the mystery of the thing. But anyway. I want folks to just take a notice of what they feel. Through him, with him, in him, in the unity of the Holy Spirit. I'm going to stop right there. I have not been to a Catholic Mass in any way, shape, or form since my wife died. Here is the reason why I wanted to point
out. Sorry, I had a flashback.
That's actually something that I want to hit really quickly. Mm-hmm. Normalization, the repetition, the learned behavior, the instilled peace. How many of us suddenly could flash back and know what the next lines were going to be, and we're like, the next line should be coming. Why isn't the next? Oh, it's not. Oh, okay, he's. It's, and just suddenly, just like the train wreck moment of it's supposed to continue. What's it doesn't matter at this point. I had it right there, even for myself, and I forced myself to stop. And I have not heard that incantation, and I will call it that, in 9.5 years. But it's instilled in me. It's ingrained in my brain. I can't get rid of it, and I haven't thought about it.
Forgot to eat the wafer.
Then I can't talk. Oh, maybe that's the kind of the point. real quick, to paraphrase from NASA, Joe, got it, didn't get it.
Yep, got it.
Tech, got it, didn't get it.
You got it.
Heretic woman?
Too many years.
Down?
There are still prayers in the Lutheran book that I think I can still recite off the top of my head.
Exactly. Exactly the point. That's the harm. That's the fool me once moment. We are adults, well into our adulthood, and we know how much this stuff has been crap for who only knows how many years. And it is so ingrained, it's not even funny. Give me a child until he's 7 years old, I will give you the man. I forget exactly who it was that said it, and I'm probably semi-butchering the quote.
It was a Jesuit philosophy, I believe.
It very well could have been.
Yeah, the Black Robes.
Bottom line, that's the problem of the repetition, of fooling early and often and continuing, because then it becomes on us to try to deprogram out of it. Now, here's the 180-degree piece that I was going to go with. And I'm going to throw it open for whoever wants to hit on it first. When we deal with religion, or pretty much anything that doesn't have backing, which is almost exclusively religion, you turn it on its head, turn 180 degrees, science and experimentation and learning. Where does the fool me once piece happen in science that we can think of? I can think of one off the top of my head, although I'm kind of fuzzy on the specific details, which was I'm not remembering exactly what it was. There was an excavation where supposedly, I'm losing it now. I'm trying to remember if it was supposedly an excavation where a tribe of, now I remember what it was. It was on Skeptic's Guide to the Universe last year. They had unearthed what they were terming the Hobbit people.
Uh-huh.
where they thought that it was a genetically disparate species of humanoid that were shorter, stockier build, different build, only to discover afterwards that the individual or individuals just had various birth defects of some kind, genetic defects that made them shaped that way, misshapen by comparative standards.
Which happens.
Yes.
Yep.
So they thought that they had something brand new, and then all of a sudden, well, not okay, wait a minute, not so much. Mm-hmm. Oh, wait, that's not exactly fool me twice then, was it? Mm. Okay, well, there's got to be something else. I mean,
Brontosaurus.
That one's still caught in my head, and I still can't get away from that. Explain.
Brontosaurus never actually existed. What happened was the head of a known dinosaur got mixed up with the bones of another dinosaur. I believe it was a Diplodocus. And they thought, oh, it's a new kind of dinosaur, and they called it a Brontosaurus. And, you know, for decades, everybody was like, because that was like my favorite dinosaur when I was a little kid. I was like, Brontosaurus is really kind of cool and long neck and stuff. And turns out that no, it never actually existed. It was a mistake.
Yeah, I always saw them depicted as being very, very smooth, elegant,
yes,
moving creatures.
That's why I liked it, because it had this sort of this rounded body with the big, long, elegant, curvy neck and the little tiny head and all of that. But no, it never actually existed.
I kind of had an "Are you serious?" moment in the first Jurassic Park movie when they showed that particular type of dinosaur rear up on its hind legs.
Yeah.
Brachiosaurus.
There was actually, I believe, a scientist who said, if one of those things actually did that, it would collapse under its own weight.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. It would break every bone in its hindquarters.
And actually, well, so that also is a fool me once thing. Damn it. Anyway, just off topic for no reason. You know why animals don't get as big as they were, say, you know, in, you know, the Jurassic, Cretaceous, whatever period?
Oxygen content in the atmosphere, isn't it?
Exactly!
Mm. Wait a second. I thought it was because the moon was closer and its gravity was counteracting the gravity of Earth.
What? Has a lot more to do with the oxygen content of the planet. You see, when you see the gigantic insects. That is why you don't have, you know, spiders the size of dogs. There's just not enough oxygen in the atmosphere right now. Their bodies could not metabolize. They would be too large. There would not be enough oxygen through their breathing.
Suffocate.
Yeah, that and collapse under their own weight. Because their muscles would not have enough oxygen to do it.
Hmm. Joseph says we should have a funeral for the Brontosaurus.
Yes,
he was not aware of that.
Yeah, we can put it right next to Pluto.
Yes.
Oh, there we go. And just because it's the only one that I know of in my limited knowledge that is fun, mm-hmm. We should actually do like a double Irish wake for the Brontosaurus and Pluto as a planet.
There we go.
I was about to bring up
Pluto. Well, supposedly they're reclassifying Pluto as a planet again.
Well, they've come up with a new classification.
An exoplanet or something.
Now, guess what? I learned on my show this week why that whole Pluto thing happened, apparently. Our friend Wesley from Atheist Nomads was on the show, and we were talking about it, and he said that there was a moon out on some other planet, and it was a small planet, and they decided to get away from the Greek-Roman god naming convention, and they called it Xena for Lucy Lawless. And then they found, yes, and then they found later that said small planet had a moon, and guess what they called the moon?
Gabriella?
Yes, Gabrielle. And so eventually somebody figured out that they had gone all nerdy and departed from the traditional naming convention, and they tried to figure out a way that they could force a change on it, and they examined the planet and determined that they thought the characteristics of this planet didn't actually warrant it being a planet, and they downgraded it to not being a planet, but at the same time realized that Pluto had the same characteristics of said planet, and it became a casualty of this whole naming thing.
Actually.
And so now it's known as a whisker biscuit.
Yeah.
So now there has to be a 2-hour made-for-TV movie with Xena where she goes and slays the mythic god Pluto.
There we go.
Yeah, Joe.
Actually, Pluto wasn't necessarily named under that convention.
No. Okay.
It was named by an 11-year-old girl.
Disney.
Mm-hmm. Nah, it fits.
Fits, yes.
But, you know, it was actually, who was it? Clyde Tombaugh who observed it. And then it was the idea of an 11-year-old British girl. Who's her name? Venetia Burney. So, yeah.
Ooh. Okay. So cool.
So my fool me once thing for science was the egg. It's good for you, it's bad for you, now it's good for you again. Well, no, it's only the yolk's bad for you, but the white part's good. You make up your mind, I'm trying to have breakfast.
There's so many things like that. Like, you know, drink wine. Oh, don't drink wine. Drink some alcohol. Don't drink any. Don't drink coffee.
You make up your mind, I'm trying to binge drink.
Yeah.
Vitamin C.
Yes.
Milk. You know, what kind of milk? Whole milk, 2%, 1%, skim.
You know what? I'm just going to eat what the hell I want. And
Uncle Kage found a wonderful solution to that. He only has one glass of wine a day.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, but isn't that about the equivalent size of a
Not commenting on the size of said glass.
Yeah, a claw-footed tub is what I was thinking.
He's got this one that somebody got him. It's literally the size of what you would expect for like a golfer's World Cup or something like that. It's just gigantic. He had to use a straw.
I thought mine was pretty good, but can't compete with that.
No, it's a very nice looking goblet there.
Thank you.
Your drinking vessel is very nice too. So speaking about Pluto, and this actually will tie in before we completely get out of here. Leave me alone, Joe. I'm tired. I'm drugged up. I'm getting away with what I can. DJ rule number zero.
Hey.
At this time, there is a mission still on its way out there to Pluto as we speak. As of the recording of this episode, which is 14 December, currently approaching 2 a.m. Eastern Time, 2014, which means, yes, we're running a little bit late, but we'll be getting out of here shortly. The New Horizons mission is still en route. It is currently inside of a 99-day rehibernation, as I'm reading the scroll as it's coming through. It is expected to reach its closest approach to Pluto in 212 days, 4 hours, 52 minutes, and 30 seconds. Yes, they time it to the second. And if we've learned anything from NASA, if they're going to go ahead and time something out to the second, they know what the hell they're talking about, and they're going to be right on the money. I mean, look at the Mars the Mars SUV. It was landed after who only knows how many millions of miles to, what was it, 2 kilometers away from where it was supposed to be? Some such bizarre number. But it was amazing.
The comet was more impressive.
True. But we'll do a little bit more on that. Hopefully, Dallin will be back momentarily before we have to get out of here. But through all this time, NASA has only had ground-based pictures and then close space pictures. Even Hubble's incredible camera only sees it as a fuzzy disk because it's not designed for looking here in the solar system. It's designed for looking out into space, into the absolute depths of time and space itself. The Hubble Ultra Deep Field image is an incredible animation that you can look up over on YouTube, and it is amazing. They pointed Hubble in a space about the size of a grain of rice held at arm's length, I believe they said it was, and they just pointed it there where there was otherwise nothing that they knew of. And they were able to go back in time, an incredible amount of time. The Hubble Ultra Deep Field image is what you'd be looking for. It's absolutely amazing. Yes.
The thing about the New Horizons project is the reason why it's very specific when they launched it, because when New Horizons is due to reach Pluto, it's going to be during Pluto's periapsis, pretty much, where it's closest to the Sun on its orbit, because it does not have a circular orbit. And the reason for this is because with the radio telescopes, they have found that Pluto actually has evidence of an atmosphere. You wouldn't think that something roughly the size of the Moon would have an atmosphere. The Moon doesn't. Why would this? It has ice on it. And when it very much like a comet, when it gets close to the Sun, or closer than it usually is, that ice does in fact evaporate, and it does maintain a very, very minute atmosphere for a short time. Or at least that's what we have evidence of. Obviously, you know, in the time that we've known about Pluto, it hasn't even completed a few degrees of its orbit. But,
Well, Dallin is Dallin dropped out, so I figured just to be on the safe side, I'd send him re-invite him back in.
Sorry, the ping got me.
It's okay. But on top of all that, there is still the big question yet to be answered: is Pluto a single entity? There's a possibility that's been bandied about that Pluto may be as many as five individual objects, all gravitationally bound to each other. Hmm. So we've never seen Pluto in the kind of detail that we're about to, quote-unquote. I mean, in 200 days, we're going to have amazing information that we've never had before. And I, for one, can't wait. I'll have to, like everybody else, but I can't wait to see what we get.
We have Dallin back.
Yep, yeah. Temporarily at least. Let me guess.
Yeah, I'm actually on my I'm on my cell phone right now. Just my computer's rebooting. It just blue screened on me all of a sudden.
Ow.
Ooh.
I thought you had a power outage because you're
dark.
Like, really, really dark.
Hey, it's called Aboriginal, hon.
Shut up. I just started the fire in a room here, okay? No, my phone just happened to be in a room where the light is mostly turned off, so.
Aha.
The only thing I was going to comment on what you were talking about just a moment ago, Chujin, is that wouldn't it be just a kicker if it gets out just past Neptune and then the Kraken eats it?
for those of you that don't understand the reference, it's a reference to Kerbal Space Program. If the physics on a ship suddenly make it spontaneously disassociate, that's typically been referred to as the Kraken eating it, or claiming, which is kind of almost as funny as I want to see Dallin's face when this one comes through on the Minecraft servers when the general pop comes up that somebody fell from a tall height and died, and suddenly everybody with the caps lock on types out there really quickly, "More blood for the gravity god." So you can have fun with that. So we're
Lord Newton has been appeased.
Pretty much.
Happy hey, Christmas.
Yes, the machine is rebooting, I see, because Skype has suddenly said, he lives!
Yeah, so, I'm not entirely sure what happened there.
That's okay. Do you want to jump back over on there, and I'll get everybody else for their closing, or do you want to do here?
Yeah, sure, just give me a second and I'll do that.
Sure, I'll resend the invite for you in just a couple seconds.
Okay, thanks.
No worries. I'm just waiting for his account to say that it's gone out because I don't want to send the invitation if it's just going to cross over. I don't trust Google Hangouts sometimes, okay? I'll admit it. There's a certain kind of voodoo that I just don't understand, and I'm not going to play around with it at all. So, like I said, it's we're getting really really close in on this one. As far as Pluto is concerned, or a science has fooled us and then pulled the rug out from under. Anybody else have anything more that they want to add on to that one? Because I think it's, even though we've only got a couple of items to go by, I think it's pretty clear that it's really not science's bag to do that kind of thing. Sort of.
Science doesn't typically fool us. Now, the observations sometimes do. But that's not science's fault. That's just, you know, what we saw at that time, for all intents and purposes, looked like, you know, we had the right answer. And then all of a sudden, Mother Nature says, guess what?
New data.
Joke's on you.
I'm the new data. Gotta love me. Yes, I make...
No, no, Lore, you are not.
I think we're talking about two different things here. Anyway.
Oh, you make all the Star Trek references, and then you miss that one.
No, because I was actually making a reference to the dinosaurs.
Yes, I know, but I was making...
I know. Anyway. So
go toss your grandmother into the tar pit already.
Wow. Great.
What? I love that episode.
Anyway. So we got to see about pulling all this stuff together. Down for this whole science fool me once thing, was there anything left that you wanted to hit?
Well, I'm not sure about anybody else because of my blue screen there, but if I had to say there was one fool me once, it had to have been the vaccination.
Oh, yeah.
Now, I say this because it did come up. The so-called study was published in a legitimate journal at the time, and everybody bought into it. You know, vaccinations are bad, blah, autism, mutation, whatever. But even after it was found to be complete and utter 180-proof bullshit, to this day, I've talked with people. I worked with a guy who was an anti-vaxxer. And even after I told him, hey, look, this guy just got hung up to dry, tarred, and feathered in the medical community as of being a complete and utter sham. He still kept going after it. Mm-hmm. And did the whole anti-vaccine. He's still on it. I don't know if he likes Jenny McCarthy's butt. I'm not sure. I mean, let's face it. You get a former Playboy model to front your agenda, you're going to get some guys regardless of the bullshit you're slinging. But no, he's still part of it. I know other people who are anti-vaxxers. Thankfully, nobody in my family, because I have nieces and nephews who are having kids who are getting them vaccinated, thankfully. You know, all praise reason. There we go. But yeah, that's my point, is we're still seeing the fool me twice on the vaccination thing. And they're still going back and referencing the guy who was publicly shamed for it, but for some reason still has some kind of credibility amongst his peers. Mm-hmm. Or amongst the general populace, I should say. So yeah, that's mine.
That's actually, that actually works out really, really great for this whole thing. Doing the little experiment earlier, of course, as annoying as it's going to be for a lot of people in the future, and I know that's going to be, and again, I can only apologize so many times, but the evidence is there for you. If you've come up through religion before, especially the Catholic stuff, you've been trained. You are Pavlov's expression when you really come down to it. And that's, like I said earlier, I mean, that is the worst harm of it all. It's not so much shame on me, but you don't even have that. And that's kind of part of the reason why I wanted to write the title that way. Because you can fool me once and keep going. And if I've been taught wrong, and I accept it because I was taught by people who were themselves taught wrong, and so on and so on and so on, it just becomes the norm. It just becomes the cultural norm. It becomes the societal norm. And that's a problem. Not because it's wrong and it keeps getting perpetuated, but because it gets perpetuated in an enclosed space, isolated from question. Now, we've talked about this on several occasions, and the more that I make reference to it, the more I think to myself that my fight, if you even want to call it that, my disagreement, is not with religion. My fight and disagreement is with dogma. Mm-hmm. Religion be damned. They've all got good pieces that they do, and they've all got bad pieces that they do. There's a piece about that I'm not gonna talk about it right at the moment because I want to save that for another time. But it doesn't matter which religion, because it depends a lot on what you're defining the religion as being. After all, the Aboriginals in Australia had their mythos of some kind, and the tribes of Africa that have been isolated for how many generations have got theirs, and the Native Americans and the Inuits and the Native Alaskans, they've all had their mythos. After all, here in the Americas, a lot of the Native Americans, the ones that we've typically referred to as Indians improperly, they don't see the man in the moon. They see the rabbit in the moon. And now there are culturally some people who look up at the moon at a full night and they see a unicorn's head. And I can understand that. But they're all wrong, of course. It's just the moon. And it's something that's inside of our heads. It's the pareidolia giving us something that we can latch onto and see a pattern of and keep with it because it's something that we hold some kind of reference for. And that's the problem. Because if you have had your memory screwed with, your expectations screwed with, and set in such a fashion that things happen time and time and time again, bad things happen. You miss an exit on the highway because you thought that you were going to one place and you, oh, that's right, I got to stop somewhere else, but normally my habit would be to go ahead and do this. And maybe you freak out suddenly because you suddenly remember and you flinch and you end up clipping somebody's car next to you, and next thing you know, you're in a four-car pileup because you broke out of your typical mental mold. Now, does that happen? I don't have anything for it, but I can easily see something like that happening. And how tragic. Because you missed something mentally. You had a tick. Okay. Well, that's an easy enough thing to do. that's an easy enough thing to break away from. Because, you know, you just make a mental note for yourself. You could put a sticky note on your dashboard. But what happens when it's something cultural? What if it's something that you just do because you've been trained to do? You've been expected to do. You've been indoctrinated into doing. It gets harder and harder and harder to get away from that because you're expected. And when you're in a bigger and bigger group, it's even harder to stop it. Maybe that's part of the reason why there are so many kids, newborns, who die from syphilis or herpes. Because they have unwittingly become indoctrinated into a culture that says you don't need to have that extra piece of skin on your body. You were built wrong in the first place. Let me take care of that for you. And let me clean the wound in one of the most unsanitary ways possible. Maybe it takes something like that to finally break the cycle. But if it were, maybe it would have stopped 2,000 plus years ago. As always, thank you for taking the time to watch with us. I say it every time. Know full well this is not a sexy vlogcast, but we do still think that all of our perspectives, diverse as they are, have still have merit. And we appreciate you taking the time to listen to some of them. As always, thank you on the round table. Dallin, thank you for your time.
Pleasure to be here, as always.
Heretic Woman, thank you, hun.
Thank you.
Unreno Tech, you take care of yourself, man.
Good night, everybody.
Joe, thank you for your time.
I defy your assertion that this is not a sexy vlogcast. I don't. You speak for yourself, but I'm sexy as hell.
And oh, so modest.
It is definitely a sexy broadcast. I'm not wearing any pants.
All right.
To that end,
my flag is down.
That I didn't know.
To that end.
To that end. Want to see? No. Hold on, let me stand up.
No.
I will kick you from the call.
Yakko, anything to say?
That's all, folks.
I'm just kidding. I'm wearing pants.
In any case,
not wearing any underwear.
In any case, guys, thank you very much. As always, I'm not quite sure what we're going to do.
Are you okay there with your mouthful?
Thanks.
Welcome. At the moment, the recording schedule right now falls, fortunately, away from the holidays as we're coming up onto them. So I don't foresee any problems for the time being for recordings to continue. If anything should happen, I will make sure that announcements do go out. If you would like to follow us on G+, Twitter, Facebook, you can find me under the name Shujin Tribble all over the place and follow me along, and you will be able to find out when we're going to be doing our thing. If you're looking for a follow back or something like that, please, especially on Facebook, send me a message to let me know who you are, how you found me, so that I know that you're not just some kind of quack account. And if you'd like to send ideas our way, you can send it over to shootintribble@gmail.com. Please put holy crap in the subject line. And if you'd like to leave a voicemail message, of course, the voicemail number is right there. 859-HCTV-554. We sincerely hope, if you don't see us for some reason, on behalf of all of us, we sincerely hope that whatever holiday you celebrate, or even none, it's a safe one, it's a healthy one, and it's an enjoyable one. please take care of yourselves. And as always, before we get out, I say my goodnights for all of you. I say my goodnights for my lady, too. Because, as I said, 9.5 years on, I'm still in love. Matane Fujin, I love you and I miss you. Dream of me. And of course, as always, everyone, until the next time we get together, remember, Amazon, you can buy your own wafers.
I got potato chips.
And we'll see you soon. Until then, next time.
Good night. You've been listening to Holy Crap, the Vlogcast. Feel free to leave a comment on the show's website at holycrapthevlogcast.com, where you'll also find links to our Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, and Google Plus pages. Theme music provided by Kevin MacLeod at incompetech.com. On behalf of all of us here, thank you for listening.